Hey everybody, if you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hey everybody, it's me, Josh, and this week for SYSK Selects, I've selected our episode on Rasputin, the Mad Monk. And I remember it was recorded during a weird time at How Stuff Works. For some reason, we were recording in an old corner office and there were weird blackout drapes on the windows. It was very odd, but it lent itself perfectly to this episode. And a heads up, I should say, this one has a lot of talk about genitalia. So if you're a parent, you may just want to be aware of that. Are we talking about Rasputin? You're darn tootin'.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and this is Stuff You Should Know, the podcast.
That's right. Are we doing Rasputin?
Yeah, we're doing Rasputin.
Okay. No disputing Rasputin.
That's right.
Actually, there is a lot of disputing.
There's tons of it. The man's whole life is in dispute,
yeah.
Pretty much.
Mystic, hypnotist?
Possible healer?
Porn star?
Yeah, pretty much.
Not a porn star.
He was into some freaky stuff.
He could have been. He's a big dude, 6'4".
Yeah, I saw that written down.
And, like, you know, there's pictures of him, which is great, because this is a time in our world history where we had photographs of these folks.
Right. But even that said, like, the fact that there are surviving photographs of him when he was just some peasant in Russia really speaks to the impact that he had on the people around him.
Totally.
There are very few Russian peasantry portraits, you know?
Yeah, I bet.
Or studies of a specific person from, like, you know, 1880, 1890 even.
That's a good point.
But there's pictures of Rasputin before he became famous.
Yeah, and those creepy eyes.
Yeah. It depends on the photo, I think.
Like, I think some of them they make a little more creepy.
Yeah.
Some of them look photoshopped.
Yeah.
Like the glowing ones and stuff.
Well, plus also when he's like, I think he turns it on sometimes too, like, oh, look at me.
Yeah. Totally.
Freak.
Yeah.
So, we're talking about Rasputin. I think everybody kind of has a certain idea. He's also known as the Mad Monk.
Yeah.
And he was a prolific lover.
Yeah. He was a kinky man.
Yeah. And he had the ear of the Tsar and the Tsarina, the last ones, Tsar Nicholas II and his wife.
Of the Romanov?
Yeah, the Romanovs. That's another way to put it.
Yeah.
So Alexandra and Nicholas II invited Rasputin to their court, which we'll get into. Let's just start chronologically here, though.
Okay. Like birth?
Yeah.
Well, he was born Grigory Ifimovich Rasputin in 1869, Siberia. I imagine being born in Siberia in 1869 is just a big ball of laughs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Or in 2013.
Yeah.
And he supposedly, although this was disputed by his daughter, I believe.
Yeah, I want to say, for me, this is the fact of the podcast. Rasputin had children.
Yeah.
Like, he had a family. He was married from age 20 on.
Yeah, and they still exist. Apparently in France.
One of them lives in Los Angeles, I believe.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Porn star?
I don't think so. But, I mean, think about it. Rasputin, and just bear that in mind, he was married and had a family.
Yeah.
This whole time, from age 20 on.
Yeah, that's a little weird, actually.
Yeah.
So his daughter, I believe, disputed this, but apparently early on his religious activity was, and he was involved with a group called the Clists, with a K and an H.
Uh-huh. And a Y.
And a Y.
And then everything else normal.
And then they were into some serious, like, you know, sexual activity, like self-flagellation that erupted into orgies.
Right. Self-flagellation in front of a group.
Yeah.
And then people would be like, okay, it's humpy time.
Yeah, with the idea that in order to cleanse yourself of sins, you just had to do a lot of that sin. Is that right?
Yeah, and the reason that they would have orgies was because it was part of their religious belief was that if somebody was having trouble with sin, you had to help them work it out. Get rid of the sin by doing the sin.
Right.
And apparently it was a sin to have an orgy, and so they did it a lot.
Interesting.
And they were hated among the Russians, basically. They were mistrusted.
Yeah.
They were just viewed upon as weird. And they were actually fairly subversive, and they knew that they were viewed like this. So one of the tenets of being a Clist was that you went to the church, the Russian Orthodox Church, and you were fervent and outspoken and super into the Russian Orthodox Church by all outward appearances.
Like, oh, really?
That was what you did if you were a Clist.
And then your dirty secret was
right.
You would whip yourself and have sex with like 20 people at the same time.
Exactly.
Nice. Well, like I said, his daughter disputed that he was involved, although historians say that he was. So who knows?
I read that she said that he was rejected by the Clists.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, he might have... Well, never mind. We'll get to that. He may have been too much for them. So he built his reputation traveling around Russia as a healer, as a mystic and a preacher, and eventually landed in St. Petersburg in 1905, somehow got introduced to the aforementioned Tsar and Tsarina.
Yeah, but before that, he had undergone a religious conversion. Apparently from about the age of 12, he was like doing it with anything he could get his hands on. I don't know what age, but I would say before 20, uh-huh. Between 12 and 20, some monk came through the village and said, you know what? I think you should come with me to the monastery. I think you're kind of special.
You've got some talent.
Exactly.
Young man.
So he took him to the monastery, and that's where Rasputin underwent this religious conversion there and came out like really fervently religious, like the real deal. He actually walked from Russia to Palestine and back. Walked. That's not a short trip.
Is there a dispute in that, or is that?
Not that I understand.
Okay.
I haven't seen that disputed.
Gotcha.
But I think that's a good point to bring up. Anything that sounds even remotely a stretch that's attached to Rasputin, you should probably take with a grain of salt.
Yeah, because he was such an odd, unique individual in the world history, there's been like countless stories, and I'm sure at the time there were just like rampant stories about who this guy was.
Yeah, and not only that, most of them were written and spread by his enemies.
Yeah.
He was a very hated person contemporarily. So the original accounts are of people who are trying to make him look bad.
Sure.
And then people started basing biographies on those original accounts.
Yeah.
And that's why he's got such a bad reputation. There's so much lore and legend and confabulation surrounding him. So you don't really know much about him.
He was just like, I'm just a giant Siberian monk looking for a good time.
Pretty
much. Why's everyone out to get me?
Why's everybody got so many hang-ups?
I know, the haters.
So, yeah, he makes it. He's already kind of known as a starit. Start, yeah.
Which a religious advisor.
By the time he gets to St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
And he's hanging out there. He's like, we're going to make it in the big city. This is where the Romanovs live. This is a good place for me to be. And apparently he, like you said, impressed somebody enough that he was taken to the Romanovs and introduced to them at court.
This is might as well be Boogie Nights.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
You know?
Yeah.
He's Eddie from the Valley.
Yeah.
All right, so he does get introduced and worms his way into the inner circle. Not worms his way through. He earned his place in the inner circle.
He definitely did.
By healing a hemophiliac son, Alexis, who was the heir to the throne and very important to keep around and alive. And
he was the only boy in the family.
Yeah, despite being a hemophiliac, he would do dumb things like ride horses and fall off them.
Right.
And apparently, the first time, that happened the second time, he was not doing so hot, and Rasputin supposedly healed him. possibly through hypnosis.
So with hemophilia, I didn't really realize this. I always thought hemophilia was where you cut yourself and like your wound wouldn't clot.
It's that as well, right? Or not at all?
It is.
Yeah.
But I thought that was it.
Right.
Apparently, the much bigger problem is with internal bleeding.
Yeah, because you don't know what's going on.
Right. And that's what Alexei had. And they were worried about him becoming a morphine addict, so they wouldn't give him any morphine. So he would just suffer, like these bouts of internal bleeding.
Poor kid.
And Rasputin, the doctors couldn't do anything.
Right.
And Rasputin came along the first time and basically just took away his pain.
Yeah, and in 1912 it happened again. This is after the horse fall.
Yeah.
And he was, I believe, not there at the time, and Tsarina gave him a ring and said, "Hey, Rasputin, we need you to do your thing again." And he sent a telegram that said, "Don't sweat it. He's going to recover the next day."
Yeah.
And I guess, like, you know, long distance hypnosis or whatever happened, or maybe healing prayers, who knows? Or maybe none of that.
Yeah, there's also a hypothesis that he exerted the first calming influence over the house about this matter that anyone ever had, and that in and of itself had some sort of healing effect.
I think,
because supposedly he was known to be a very calming figure.
Well, and
when
I think
you're in his presence
with hemophilia, I think to lowering your stress levels will help. So.
I'll bet.
Yeah,
man, sure. Stress is a killer, isn't it?
It is, literally. So, at the same time, while this is all going on. Like you said, there were people out there that did not like him, one of which, not the least of which, was Prime Minister Peter Stolypin. And he was like gathering a case, putting a case together basically to present and get him ousted from the court, saying this guy's a crazy sex pervert.
Yeah, I think he was not the first one to accuse him of being a clist, but like really was taking that and running with it.
Yeah, like he wanted him gone, and he died. Being shot at the opera before he could make this case.
Yeah.
And some say that old Tsar Nicholas might have been behind that.
Yep.
But we don't know that for sure.
Yeah, he was the Tsar.
Yeah, they were
what
not
are you
keeping
gonna
records
do?
Very well in Russia at the turn of the century, were they?
Especially not of cover-up scandals.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
So Peter Stolypin comes up. He tries it. Fails.
Yeah, not tried to kill him. Just tried to get him removed.
Right. We should let's provide a little backdrop here.
Okay.
At about this time, this is 1910, 1912, 1914.
Sure.
The world is undergoing a huge transition.
Yeah.
From agriculture to industrialization.
Yeah.
And the Russian peasantry loves the Tsar. They love those guys.
Yeah.
But
the farmers.
Yeah. In the cities, an urban working class is developing, and they don't love the Tsar. They think the Tsar is disconnected, out of touch, is back in these agrarian days, and everybody's moving forward into the factories, and that the Tsar has no, love for these new people. And this is where Lenin came from, and the Bolsheviks came from, were these factories. So this is all going on in the background. That's in Russia. Outside of Russia, Europe is going to war for World War I. So Russia is torn between these domestic problems and these international problems.
Yeah.
And it's headed by a family that is becoming viewed as increasingly out of touch
yeah.
with what's going on in Russia, and therefore are losing legitimacy pretty quickly. And now all of a sudden, there's this weird guy
yeah.
who humps anything that moves and has the ear of the Tsar and the Tsarina. And where did he come from? What's going on?
Yeah, and increasingly less influence on the Tsar apparently over the years, but increasingly more influence on the Tsarina.
Yeah.
She was way into him, especially after he healed the son twice, or supposedly did.
Right.
And
she definitely believed he did. So
oh yeah,
that's all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Say it.
That's all it took.
And he even called them Mama and Papa, which
yeah.
I thought was interesting.
I think that's manipulative. He was. I take it from my impression that he was being manipulative by calling them that, and I'll bet it was creepy.
I bet it was. So he's in the newspapers and stuff. He's becoming a well-known guy, and I'm sure the industrialists are reading this. And like you said, who is this guy that's at the center of all this?
Yeah.
And he's got this great influence. And who even is he? Even.
Well, he had not only influence, but once Russia joined World War One,
yeah, it was all over.
It was. Tsar Nicholas goes off to command the army, and the Tsarina is left in charge, which means Rasputin is
sort of in charge.
Yeah, very,
not in charge,
very
but,
close to being in
yeah.
charge himself. And he was in a position to stack well-paying, high-level government jobs with friends.
Cronies.
Who were incompetent and inept. And they almost completely undermined the infrastructure of Russia. Like, trains didn't operate. Armaments weren't built for the war effort. People weren't fed. There was, like, nobody running the show, or nobody who knew what they're doing
right.
that was running the show, and it was all Rasputin's fault, and this was the last straw.
Yeah.
This is what led to the revolution.
Well, and also to some murder attempts.
Well, yeah, he's like Bob Marley. People would try to kill him, and it just didn't happen, you know?
The first one, on June 16th, this woman, Kionia Kozmishna Guseva.
Oh, that was good, Chuck.
Thank you. Apparently was sent by a former friend of his named Sergei Truvanov. He was a monk who was tight with Rasputin, but they split up in 1911 because he was kind of disgusted by his, you know, humpiness. And apparently sent this woman to murder him, and she stabbed him in the stomach. And, like, it was gnarly. Apparently, he had some entrails hanging out.
Jeez.
It was easily a mortal wound. But here in the article, they just said, like, he healed a few weeks later. They made it sound like he healed himself.
Mm-hmm.
He had, like, surgeries, and I think it was, like, you know, 8 to 10 weeks
gotcha.
Of recuperation. I don't think there was, like, any mystery to that. But they did manage to save his life. But he wasn't the same after that. He became an opium user. And the daughter was one that was just like, it was just different after that.
That sucks.
He had bad, like, stomach problems, which we'll get to later, actually. That'll play a role.
See, there's one other aspect of Rasputin that I kind of gathered about him from researching him. And that was, like, he had this thing. Not
he
that thing.
He did.
He had kind of a light. He had an exuberance. He loved life. He didn't seem to be even though he's been accused of all sorts of manner of crimes, we don't really know what he did or didn't do back then, because, again, contemporary sources are like...
Is he the devil?
Against
is he?
Him.
Yeah.
But he seemed to have something that was really neat about him. Like, he was somebody that I think a lot of people wanted to be around.
Yeah.
And the idea that, like, that went out of his stomach wound...
Oh, yeah.
That's sad.
It is.
Not as sad as what ultimately happens to him, but let's keep going.
All right, what ultimately happened is a plot was hatched, and we'll get to the newer, possibly truer story, but here's the original story. Prince Felix Yusupov, he was the husband of the niece of the Tsar Nicholas on December 29th, 1916.
Wait, he was also the gay lover of the person who was also an heir to the throne, if Alexei didn't make it, who the Brits favored. So keep that in mind.
So he was married to the niece and the gay lover of...
Yeah.
So he had both his bases covered, basically.
Right, exactly.
Well, good for him. 1916, that's pretty, you know, forward-thinking.
Sure.
So he plotted to
We're all going to evolve into bisexuals.
Maybe. He plotted to kill Rasputin to save Russia. And here's where things really, like the details of how this went down are really highly disputed to this day.
Yeah.
What's supposedly his
name? Yusupov?
Yeah. Supposedly he invited him over, said, hey, come take a look at my wife. You'd like her.
I also read that he said, we got a gypsy wine party going on over here. And Rasputin's like, I'm there.
Well, here's the deal, though. He gets there. He laces pastries and cakes and wine with cyanide, enough to kill like five men. Supposedly Rasputin starts chowing down. Nothing happens. The daughter disputes this and says he would not. He had bad stomach problems after his stabbing incident, and he didn't drink wine or eat sweets anymore.
Oh, okay.
That's what she said.
Well, that explains the later finding.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
It does explain the later finding, perhaps. But he had hyperacidity in his stomach, and she's like, he just wouldn't have been doing that.
Okay.
Or possibly he was immune. That was another theory, which I think is bunk, that he had taken part in Mithridatism, which is like slowly building up your immunity to poison by ingesting small amounts of poison.
Yeah, I've been doing that for years.
I'm sure you have. Oh, is that why?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Or maybe they have a theory that the cyanide might have vaporized when they baked the stuff in cakes.
Oh, yeah.
With the high temperatures.
Dummies.
But at any rate, the poison had no effect on him. And they were like, what is going on with this creep? Like, he could have killed 10 men with this stuff.
Or an ox, Yusupov later said.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So they said, I know what we'll do. Let's just shoot him in the back.
Easy peasy.
Easy peasy. And he did so. He fell down and died. They fought. He checked his pulse.
Wait. First they went upstairs and partied.
Well, no, and they checked him out, and then, like, he's dead. Let's go party.
Right.
And then he came back down, I think, to get a coat or something, and checked him again.
To get a coat?
I think that's what how the story goes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's when Rasputin's just like, ugh, he comes alive and, like, attacks the guy.
After they shot him twice in the back, right?
I think.
At least once.
Two times at that point?
I think so.
It ended up being four total. With one in the forehead.
Right.
Which we'll get to as well.
Okay, so they shot him once, and then they came back downstairs, and he's still moving. Not only is he still alive, he manages to get to his feet and bust out the door.
Yeah.
And out into the yard, out into Yusupov's yard. And that's when they shot him twice.
Yeah, and beat him, like, severely. There's pictures of his body. Like, he was severely beaten with a rubber club. Tied him in a blanket. Dumped his body in the Neva River.
So let's go over this again. Shot in the back once.
Mm-hmm.
He gets up, goes outside. They shoot him two more times. They beat him with the club.
Yeah.
They wrap him up in a blanket.
Well, no, somebody shot him in the forehead, too. That was a fourth shot.
Okay. Shot him in the forehead, wrap him up in a blanket, drop him into a frozen river that they've carved a hole into.
Yeah.
And then that's that for Rasputin.
That's that.
Until they find him. And
right.
They found him, and his arm was outstretched like he'd managed to struggle free of the blanket.
Right. He managed to partially free himself, indicating that maybe he wasn't even dead when they put him in the water.
So they did an autopsy on him, and the autopsy lists Rasputin's mode of death as hypothermia. Not being shot four times, being beaten to death.
Including the forehead shot, which they, all manner of, like, evidence says that this was a kill shot by a professional.
Yeah. But supposedly he died of hypothermia.
Supposedly.
And then mysteriously they didn't, although now that you've explained it, not so mysteriously, they didn't find arsenic in his system.
Right.
But that, until, I guess, recently.
I think it was cyanide.
Cyanide, okay.
Yeah.
That was a big point of lore. Like, he ate all this stuff, this cyanide-laced pastry.
Yeah.
And, like, it didn't even show up in his system.
Right.
Well, it sounds like it didn't show up in his system because he didn't actually eat that stuff. And we have great cause to wonder if he was beaten. Was he?
Yeah, he was beaten.
Okay. So he was shot four times.
Yeah.
And I guess he was dumped in the river.
Yeah.
But what's in dispute then? Who shot him?
Yeah, who shot him, and what was the actual cause of death? Did he really free his arm, or was that just something that, you know, that happened?
Gotcha.
Like, what was the cause of death? And did they cut his penis off?
Well, that's a big one, too. Supposedly... Man, all these double entendres are,
I know,
totally,
it's
accidental,
so hard.
Man. I apologize.
Oh, there's another one.
I haven't met a single. Oh my God! I just need to stop.
So supposedly they may have cut his penis off, and it has changed hands throughout the year, maybe even belonging to a French collector who loaned it to a Russian museum to put on display for a little while. There are pictures, and we just don't know if that's it or not.
If it is, it's ginormous.
Good for Rasputin.
So much so that apparently no one's actually tested it, but just looking at it, some biologists have been like, that's a horse. That's from a horse or a cow.
Yeah. Or, as you said earlier, it looked like a baby's arm holding an orange.
I think it is.
So we don't know if that's his penis or not. It definitely adds another little strange sidebar to the story.
It definitely does.
You know?
Also, we should say that after he was buried and the Bolsheviks revolted, they dug him up and burned his body.
Oh, yeah?
Because
I don't think I knew that.
We should say the Bolsheviks did revolt.
Yeah.
The Tsar abdicated the crown in March of, I think, 1917.
Uh-huh.
And then the revolution happened. They were placed under house arrest. And then, very famously, the entire Romanov family, their doctor, two servants, and the family dog were all executed by Bolshevik revolutionaries, including Anastasia.
Yeah, and Rasputin had predicted that along with his own demise before he died, writing, "If it was one of your relations who have wrought my death, then no one in the family, none of your relations will remain alive for more than 2 years."
Yep.
That was my Rasputin.
And that's what happened. I mean, like, he was killed in December, the end of 1916. They were killed before the end of 1918, so he was right. And apparently he'd also written that he didn't expect to make it to January 1st.
Oh, really?
And he was killed 2 days before it.
Yeah, there were disputes about the date, too, but I think they settled on December 30th.
So what's up with the weirdness now?
Well, they've dug into this more recently in the 2000s. Scotland Yard has a detective named Richard Cullen and a historian named Andrew Cook. And they have a theory that I think is probably true, that it was the SIS, the British Secret Service, actually led the plot to kill him. And modern forensics believe they have tied the gun and the caliber of the bullet in the forehead was different than the other three.
Oh, yeah.
And so they have tied that back because it was not a rare gun, but rare enough to where they tied it back to this guy.
Oswald Rayner,
who was a British officer who was there.
He was there. He was also a friend of Yusupov. And while he's not named in Yusupov's memoirs about the murder of Rasputin,
which
Yusupov boasted about frequently, he does appear suddenly in that same time. So he's in the city.
Yeah.
And, a retired Scotland Yard detective and an historian both think that he's the one who carried out the kill shot.
Yeah, and Rayner actually supposedly told his cousin that he was there and that he was the guy that did the deed. But before he died in 1961, he burned all his papers. And he only had one son, and he died just a few years later.
Mm-hmm.
So all evidence is gone, except for a memo. A memo was sent between Rayner's superiors, John Scale and Stephen Alley, who weren't there at the time. And the memo says this, quote, "Although matters have not proceeded entirely to plan," which, you know, that's pretty true.
Yeah.
"our objective has clearly been achieved. Reaction to the demise of dark forces," which was Rasputin's code name, "have been well received by all, although a few awkward questions have already been asked about wider involvement. Rayner is attending to loose ends and will no doubt brief you on your return."
Wow.
So it sounds pretty rock solid to me that the SIS might have been behind it.
Right. So there was another conspiracy that's actually probably just a broader look at that it was actually the Prime Minister of Great Britain, David Lloyd George, who was ultimately behind this plot to murder Rasputin and install Yusupov's gay lover, the prince.
Right.
And the whole reason for either of these theories, the whole reason the Brits would want to get involved in the first place was because they were worried that either, one, Rasputin was going to persuade Nicholas to withdraw from the war.
Yeah.
Or he was going to continue undermining the credibility of the Romanovs so much that there was a revolution.
Right.
And either way, Russia was going to withdraw from the war, which is a big problem because they were keeping Germany busy on the Western Front.
Right.
Which meant that Germany was divided between the Western Front with Russia and the Eastern Front with the Brits.
Dicey.
It was. So if Russia pulled out, then Germany could put all of their attention on the Western Front.
Right.
The Yes.
Where
I
all
got the
was
first,
quiet.
I got them wrong the first time. I got them backwards.
Yeah, but you corrected yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah, so maybe so. Maybe Britain, and you know, it makes sense if it was SIS, it might have gone all the way to the top.
Yeah.
The prime minister.
Yeah, it's true.
You know?
So that's Rasputin. That's everything there is to know about him, and completely factual every word of it.
Yes, Rasputin.
Well, let's see. If you want to learn more about Rasputin, you can type his name into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. That is capital R-A-S-P-U-T-I-N, Rasputin. And since I said Rasputin, that means it's time for a message break. Stuff you should know. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Now it's time for listener mail.
Josh, this is a very special listener mail because it features Jerry.
Oh, that is special.
This wasn't even to us, you know?
I know.
This is just like, forget you guys. This is for Jerry. So here's how it goes. I've been listening to your show from the very beginning, guys, and I have never missed an episode. I listen to about 15 podcasts on a regular basis. And listening to those other podcasts makes me truly appreciate the job that Jerry does on your show. While listening to other shows, I often hear pieces that were intended to be edited out, but obviously were not. This is something that is extremely distracting to me. What usually happens is one of the hosts starts a sentence, doesn't come out right, so they go back and start that sentence over again. It's not done in a very natural way, and it drives me crazy, kind of like finding an obvious typo in a book. Boy, I hate that too.
Yeah.
When this happens, it takes away from the conversation aspect of the podcast and emphasizes the fact that there is an outline for these conversations. While I cannot guarantee that it has never happened in your show, I can't think of one time where something was obviously supposed to be edited out but was not. Right?
Yeah.
The production of your show is so good, it feels like you do the podcast in one continuous take without any edits. That is not true, by the way.
We're not that good.
No. We don't stop and start a lot.
No, it happens. Mistakes happen.
Yeah, but we're pretty conversational.
Sometimes we say things that we know we can't include.
It feels like you do the podcast in one take without any edits. There is much more. This is much more entertaining because it feels more like an organic conversation and a planned out discussion. Obviously, you guys plan your podcast with outlines and points you want to touch on. Not true.
No, no. That is not true. And that goes to Jerry's powers and skills.
That's right.
That guy thinks that.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, I feel like we said it a gazillion times in interviews, but not everyone reads that stuff. We have our first conversation about the topic right here in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
We study independently, then we come down, sit down, and we have our first conversation about it.
Right.
Sometimes there are starts and stops, and Jerry takes care of that. All right, finishing up here. it seems more natural in your podcast than any others that I listen to. So I just wanted to thank you guys for many hours of entertainment, and thank you especially to Jerry. She needs a raise, even if it comes out of your pockets. I agree that she needs a raise.
Not out of our pockets.
But not out of our pockets. And that is from Spencer M. Couch of Couch Law. And I was like, can I mention your law firm? And he was like, please do.
Yeah.
So that is Couch Law in Bountiful, Utah.
For all your maritime law needs.
Not in Bountiful, Utah.
Call Couch Law.
I'm not sure what kind of law he practices, but if you are in Bountiful, Utah, and you're in need of a lawyer, give him a call and say, hey, you've got good taste and you appreciate the fine work of Jerry. So here's $400 an hour.
Right. And if you are in need of a world-class podcast editor, you have to keep looking because Jerry's ours.
That's right.
Yep. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right.
She just saluted us.
Yes, she did. if you want to sing Jerry's praises, we love hearing that kind of thing. Jerry
does
especially.
Enough.
Oh, is it?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. you can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com, right?
Yeah.
Jerry gets those too. And you can join us on our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.